Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets After Midnight. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can talk to us in the chat and you can read the poems as we do. I'm Afasiana, and with me I have Pam Ray. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Faisy.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, happy to be here.
We also have, I'm going to unmute him now, Zach. Welcome to the show,
hey,
Zach.
Faze. Hey, Sam.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
So tonight we have a couple of carryovers from last week, and we have another contest that has a lot of amazing rights. So I think we have a pretty full board today, but it's going to be great to have both of you here to comment with me. I was hoping Babbler was going to be back today, but we'll see how she's feeling. It's going to depend on if she's feeling up to it, and we shall see. So the prompt
It will be nice to hear her again, but definitely want her to take care of herself.
Yes, exactly. So hopefully, well, I'd love to hear her voice. The prompt was, I send these words that you may use them as a pool of ink to see yourself reflected or see another in. And I'm going to give the first read to Pam. So, Pam, if you would please read the one by Patty Mike.
Absolutely. Angel of Mine by Patty Mike. A toll is cast on the once still River Styx, capsules of words drawing breath, to find life birthing and brewing in the pool of ink stirring below. I take hold of the goblet, dripping into the waters, filling these penned lines to the brim overflowing, and taking a long drink down to the bitter bottom, capturing, creating my stanzas kissed by fairest muse in all the lands, irises of bluest fire turned happy green, burning through the dross of my darkest night and into brighter dawns arisen. Her face is traced in a cluster, a constellation of stars high above me looking down, reflecting on the mirrored surface all around, surrounding my drowning saline, saturating a herald of the divine with lips of the sweetest wine and touch of the always soothing, intoxicating. She is my angel of mine. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And I really enjoyed this poem. I like that it kind of has the contrast of the River Styx, which is, you know, associated sort of with hell in Greek mythology. It's the river that you would go down. Although it does have the healing qualities, because I mean, Achilles was dipped in the River Styx, and the reason why he was basically immortal for a while was because he was protected by that. But his Achilles' heel, his weakness, was because he was held by his heel by his mother in some of the stories. So that part of him didn't get soaked in the water. So as much as the Styx is kind of like a bit of a spooky, more negative side of the river, it also does have that fun. But I think of it as like kind of like a dark, deep, like path to hell kind of thing. And yet, in there, when he takes his ink and he creates something out of it, there is that the beautiful muse who is the opposite of that. She's in the sky instead of the deep. She's the stars, the beauty, the light that shines. But the thing is about stars is they shine most noticeably when you're in the dark. So maybe he had to go into the River Styx to fully be able to see the beauty of the light. That contrast is really interesting to me. I like that it's filling to the brim and taking the long drink. So he's taking in the ink as much as he's putting it down. He's filling the penned lines, and he's taking from it, and then he's creating them as well. So it's like a back and forth, taking his inspiration from what he's creating and then creating more from that inspiration. Seems like a cycle, and that's a really cool way of looking at it. I like this response to the prompt. Zach, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was great. I thought that it brought to mind, like, sort of like the ferryman Karen descending to the bottom of the river Styx, and I love the Hellenistic touch. The goblet appears to be like a dose of pure inspiration. To me, that's what it symbolizes. And I love the celestial soundscape kind of looking below from the bottom of Styx. And I really like that. There's like a crushing paradox there that transcends hell. And he conjures his muse and becomes intoxicating, light and dark, very soothing. It seems like a soothing sort of almost angelic process to kind of like purge all that. And it's very streamlined that way. So I thought it was well done.
I like that way of looking at it, you know, to have the soothing kind of purge of all of that within you. I definitely find writing to be therapeutic in that way. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I really like this. I like how it speaks to the poet's relationship with their muse. And the way that the words that spill out can be both a symbolism of dark and light. I also like how this speaks on the sweetness and bitterness of both love and life, and wonderful lines all the way through. But I did especially like her face is traced in a constellation of stars high above me looking down, reflecting on the mirrored surface. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Indeed. Our next poem is by Charlie Bottle. It's called Six Seeds of Pomegranate. And just so you know, that was a line within the poem that was the prompt. It wasn't the prompt selected, but it was in the other prompts, so it's very related to the prompt itself. Zach, would you read this poem for us, please?
I send these words that you may use them as a pool of ink to see yourself reflected or see another in. Diamond, 2022. Seeds sleep silently, lying still like thoughts, burst in pods of love. In cold vernal earth, they die to wake from Hades' cold clutch and rise as a tree with green glossy leaves, orange red flowers, dance in winds and bask in balmy sunshine, play with butterflies and visiting bees, becoming red orbs, shining like leather, their seeds holding dreams of strong, steady trees anchored in gardens, of spreading abroad as tangy nomads bringing joy to all. Ruby seeds of thought encased in our hearts, seek kindness of love, hope's gentle spring rains, compassion and care, joy of dancing winds, goodness's tender hands, and freedom to bloom. These we give to you as reminders of season's memories that goodness is gleaned from dirt's bitterness, selfishness and greed, composting corpses, death's mask of soul rot gives way to rebirth of ideas mulched, thoughts grown in hummus, rich introspection, raised, fecund visions of futures where love is in harmony with great empathy and compassion. End poem.
Thank you for that wonderful read. I really enjoyed this. I think that using the seeds worked well for talking about, you know, spreading the messages, just like the pools of ink in the quote. The seeds are hope and ways to share things. Again, it starts with like the darkness from Hades' cold clutch, because you know the six seeds of pomegranate are the bits that are fed to Persephone so she will stay in the underworld. But it works out that she ends up being able to be on the upside for several months. And the part in Gaiman's poem that refers to the pomegranates is because nature has a daughter who is six seeds of pomegranate dead. And this just kind of takes that and becomes more positive, which is, it was intended to in the beginning. It was about how you can overcome. Even nature lost someone, and we were able to continue. And even through this, we continue on. Becoming red orbs, shining like leather. It's really interesting because I don't think of leather as shiny generally, but it's a cool mental image there. And tangy nomads, bringing joy to all. Really good word choices here that make it unique. Goodness is gleaned from dirt's bitterness. And it goes from the negative things like selfishness and greed and, you know, that dark imagery of the composting corpses. But it ends in harmony and empathy and compassion. So this goes through the whole cycles the way that nature does and uses it metaphorically. So I thought this was a very beautiful, profound poem. Pam, what were your thoughts? Did I lose you, Pam?
No, you did not. Sorry. For some reason, my phone screen wasn't coming on, so I could push the mute button. But, yeah, this is really an amazing write. I really like the imagery in this, the way he uses the pomegranate seeds as a metaphor for the idea of planting and nourishing and taking care of love. And that is passed along. You know, I really, man, I love the phrase tangy nomads. Anchored in gardens of spreading abroad as tangy nomads bringing joy to all. Ruby seeds of thought encased in our hearts. Seek kindness of love, hope's gentle spring rain. And I really enjoy and appreciate how those lines do speak on how we all hold within us that desire to be loved. Amazing write and very well done.
I agree. Zach, you read it for us. What did you think?
I thought it was wonderful. I thought the seeds becoming a tree is a neat image to start with, and becoming like a bunch of like helicopter seeds kind of sprinkling ideas from this interesting web of darkness. And it set quite a colorful scene, filtering that darkness and purifying it and becoming brighter and making everything beautiful. There was not an air of command about the piece, which I appreciated because of the interrogatives, but it was more gentle than an interrogation, which I loved. I loved that about it. Probably the most. It was just very like gentle and not urgent. Well done.
Well said. Our next poem, which is the last one from last week, is by Ben Hart, and it goes to all of the prompts from last week. Ben tends to break his poems up to many sections, and in this he responded to, I think, all of the prompts throughout the different sections. So here we go. I'm going to read this one. We'll meet again. By Ben Hart. It's only a blank page. It's only a blank page. I screamed at the empty mirror, and upon that barren moon, my voice shattered into a garden, a mosaic, memories bleeding through the cracks of the people I've been in this skin, as the music of the wind, and it all started coming back to me. The shadow at the door, clawing at that stained glass pane for years. You saying that we were just rabbits running around the mind of a wolf, a phone number becoming a headstone, dancing along to that aerobics instructor in the window of a swimming pool we passed just to make you laugh, breaching my wrists with feathers of the Valkyrie on a promise to God, watching the river leap to catch the rain, the collapse, the ripples, the end. The shadow at the door, clawing at that stained glass pane for years, until the bruised ghosts of iridescence no longer swayed in the hallway, and I stopped humming to drown it out, just letting it stare at me. From across those five steps that would now carry me miles, through worlds of smoke, the oblivion I exhaled into being. The moment I took comfort in it, being seen, I let it in. Only on the promise of mutual assured destruction, because here the floor was not lava. It was an open wound. Or perhaps I just wanted to see if someone could do it, make it home from blue ruins. Proof that a man was his own undoing, but it just waited in the doorway, whispering, "Limbo is just the child waiting at the door. You've had your exile. Now leave the self-consuming to death on the cross and come back to us, to where the sun still rises." You saying that we were just rabbits running around the mind of a wolf? Trapeze swingers painting faded rainbows on clear skies. A siege of paper cranes burning on the bedside table of a citizen in some dead god's dream, screaming in his sleep. Is life worthy of one who has to lose it? And only now, when caught in a loop, I hear you sing the dandelions into the future with the songs of our shared funeral playlist. And such beautiful cruelties, they go howling at the moon. A phone number becoming a headstone, a place to visit, the record of us, that our phones predicted would be history, his static laughter dancing against the silence, like a sky lantern in a blackout, a firefly lost in an architect's empty snow globe. Every memory is now a memorial of the life in those eyes, watching themselves fade out of the world ahead. Don't fear, my friend. Only the pebble sinks. The ripples go on forever. And I feel you shining bright in the times we lived together. I'm going to miss you, man. Dancing along to that aerobics instructor in the window of a swimming pool we passed just to make you laugh. On our way home to a fugue state, bodies of numb, where the house always wins, I had forgotten how to breathe that year. But there I was, jumping on broken feet and idle lungs. The starling boy trying to fly. At least they gave the angels parachutes. Nobody yelled, "Man overboard," when that smile collapsed. Snared in the trap of thought. How they call it healing, growing dead skin over a patchwork of pain. But to you, it felt more like sweeping it under the rug. Seeing scars tell a different story to what the wound remembers. Afraid that if the world wouldn't end in flames, but with all the trees holding their breath, not in a violent still, but just a quiet panic, that you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Breaching my wrists with feathers of the Valkyrie on a promise to God. Never having kissed a woman like I loved her, made death's lips tasting of lavender, a waning bitter beauty. The way home was a ballet of lights, a subconscious motion through fields of glass where every step rippled in halo. And I only stopped on the way to see all my mothers again, to watch the cherubs chase the tails of the starling comets. My life in murmuration. I wonder if anyone made a wish on the tears I shed. If so, I hope it's granted. Watch the river leap to catch the rain and pull the bleeding back below the skin into anxious undertow. I felt my chest split and the rubble of my shattered voice feeding the winds with amethyst snowfall. My dear love, it was that time when I found you, calling the clouds down to drift across the fields, a riptide of smoke heralding the last sunrise of summer. If only you had seen me then. I would have torn myself free from the water, swept you into my arms and made myself anew in your name, so the rising eyes would finally find its impossible existence outdone. The collapse. Man is not a melting glacier. Atlas casting its burden into the expanse. That is a poet's pursuit of its lunar muse. A mountain feels every pebble that rolls down its spine. But I didn't feel. Their hands slip from mine. My eyes close like the sunflower at dusk. My skin forget the music of us. A forest knows its wounds. But only as a blank page on which to retell its story of growth in the pursuit of light. I just woke up like this. A nebula of atrophy, an event horizon, a hunger, blinded, because hunger like pain was just a moth to the flames of numb. And I promised my friends that I was a survivor, so I survived, warming myself by the fire. I survived long enough to feel them die, pebbles down my spine. The ripple had birthed the universe, but they all say it was the flash. See, time is the master of the body, a shepherd in an endless black, and life is just that voyager lost on tides of trembling, blind but unafraid. But humanity? We are the only expanse that reaches in to make music, to lose something, to become someone, to fly somehow, to drown in it, and die without having to go round again, screaming, this is where I end, and I'm okay with that, to one last inexistent ear. The end. I knew fireworks and falling stars did not just flee our broken dark, but had somewhere to be. I told you so. I screamed at anxiety and grief. Nothing truly ever dies. Our gravestones were only ever mile markers to the soul, a place for the dead to rest along the Holland Road and wait for the others to catch up. We are human. Yes, we reach in to die there sometimes. But for just another garden among the stars, I say we shine pretty bright. End poem. Pam, will you start comments, please?
Sure, absolutely. Wonderful read there, Faisy. As always, a brilliant write by Ben. This just beautifully speaks on the process of grief, of missing someone, of wishing that there could have been a different outcome. Wow, I mean, amazing lines all the way through. I do especially like you saying that we were just rabbits running around the mind of a wolf, trapeze swingers painting faded rainbows on clear skies, a siege of paper cranes burning on the bedside table of a citizen in some dead god's dream, screaming in his sleep. That idea of a lot of that makes me think of those like dreams and those wishes that did not come true. The fear of life, the cruelty of life, and, you know, looking, and then the next part after that with the mention of the sky lantern in a blackout, and, you know, and I feel you shining bright in the times we live together. I'm going to miss you, man. I mean, those are just amazing lines, and they really make you think of the idea of searching for the light of somebody's spirit. So just amazing write and very well done.
It really is. It's no secret that Ben is one of my favorite poets. I absolutely love his poetry. And he sent me a message about this one. He said, I apologize, love. I know it's too long. It's too long. I'm sorry. You don't have to read it on your show if you don't want to. I know it's too long. And I was like, I can't resist. We're going to read it anyway. And it's interesting because it has, it's almost like a brevity in the beginning, and then he breaks down each line and makes a poem out of it, or each section of that original poem. A few parts that stuck out to me were, I hear you sing the Dandelions into the future. I've always loved Dandelions, which I know a lot of people don't. But when they become that big poof and you blow on it to make it go and plant its little seeds, to have someone sing and their voice kind of like sets it off, like that's the air that does it, is like just a fabulous metaphor for someone whose voice, in terms of not necessarily like their literal voice, but the things that they say and the way that they've influenced things, sets off those little seeds, plants those seeds. Like in the last poem we read, where the seeds were the key to all things, and when it's talking about the dandelions, it's kind of like this person planted all of those seeds of hope, and even when they were themselves in self-destruct mode, they gave others opportunities in the future. The part of phone number becoming a headstone, a place to visit, the record of us, really hit me hard because a few months ago I lost someone who was a long-distance friend. And, you know, we texted pretty much constantly. So the phone number becoming the headstone is, you know, you go back to that number instinctively to text, and instead it's kind of a place to visit. You look over the record of what you said, and that's your way of visiting long distance in a way. So I hadn't really thought of it as the headstone, but when he says that, I'm like, wow, I do that. I can't believe that's a thing that other people feel. So that just really resonated with me. I really liked the part that says, nobody yelled man overboard when that smile collapsed. That is such an intense thing to say, and I love it because, you know, when people are having, you know, big emergencies or more physical emergencies, like people are like, man overboard, we all got to save them. But when that smile collapsed, when this person fell into the depression that eventually kills him, it's nobody saw that moment. Nobody ran to help when that smile collapsed. That is a really intense line. I also liked snared in a trap of thought. And then the part where it says, afraid that if the world wouldn't end in flames, but with all the trees holding their breath. I mean, that was such a powerful mental image and, again, metaphor. He does the nature metaphors so well. I feel a lot of emotion when reading for Ben, and his stuff is so beautiful. Long, yes, Ben, long, I agree, but worth the time, in my opinion. Zach, what did you think?
That was wonderful. Series of vignettes. This first one, it's like hard to love somebody that doesn't love you, and that reminded me of a Sondheim song called Death Letter, and there's an air of someone that takes monumental effort to be seen and is not returned, and that's its own kind of prison. And even this is temporary because there's the sun breaking out of the clouds, and it veers between the life and death again, with funerals and shared playlists, kind of fading out at the end, but not like the Radiohead song, a lot more positive than that. It ends on a note of tolerating pain. And then, like, they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and I believe every word of it. And there's such a yearning for nostalgia of the past, but even that is a bit of a step backward and not forward, kind of like wallowing in it. And then I love that, takes that, and then the colliding forces of nature, the tempests, very powerful and romantic. And between these two, I think history could honestly repeat itself because these things could change, like the American football song, honestly. And the ambition of the piece is very impressive, I have to say, because it digs at the meaning of life, of creativity, of relationships and death. And, you know, they're not limited to that garden at the end. I think there's always the alternative of traveling the stars. So I agree with that.
That was a great comment. Yes, fantastic. I hope Ben gets to hear that. Now we are on the today's prompt, which was inspired by a cartoon I saw by Rockin' Rouquet, and it said, "You cannot shame yourself into change. You can only love yourself into evolution." So in this comment, it goes, in this comic, there, for the first part, "You cannot shame yourself into change," there was like a big black kind of shadowy thing that was standing over the figure who looks like they're kind of crying in the fetal position. And then the secondary picture is, "You can only love yourself into evolution." And there's like a rainbow person holding up the figure who's crying in the other one. And there's a little heart, like they're helping them succeed. So that was our inspiration. And Rosie's on the board says, "I love the comic." I did too. That's why I end up using it as a prompt. Whenever I see something I like, it ends up becoming a prompt, pretty much. So you all get to see. Pam, I believe it's your turn to read, if you're ready to.
Absolutely. All right. This is, wow, is this really 992 words? I hope not.
Don't read the AN. There's one section that is, I would only read as far as when it has the song, because then there's a very, 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 very big AN that we don't have time for. So just do the part up until the song.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie. All right. "Within 992 words within either way" by anonymously known E1. And it goes like this: "Life is the tragedy we make of this, or our best everyday, day in, day out effort that we make with one another for the very sake of this, just as much as we can and will allow for patient, tolerant, practical practice, our efforts today together towards an unconditional, balanced, and therefore universal, individually honest, certain peace, open freedom, and willfully forthcoming harmony with this life continues to consistently consume us together, just as equally as we try to live, to love, and to learn. Within this way, we find the creator of this moment indefinite in our eternal innocence, to be everything that is needed to complete us fully, the words that allow for freedom for you, for me. May there be for the sanctuary of true peace found through the eternal welcome of our Creator, of His Holy Spirit, of Christ Jesus, His Son. May they be for the full balance for all of us of harmony everlasting. To know this bright hope is to receive this in faith. To offer this hope is to make for certain room, all just enough for everything, for everyone to plainly understand this every day, day by day, every new again, today, blessing for themselves, that to be surrendered ourselves to time, one honest question would believe any of us would welcome no other solution, that we would be continued ourselves to consistently consider contently our Creator's love and embrace for us of utter peace, of an offering of personal everlasting freedom, of true harmony once again with the blessings of our humanity, so we all fall to be rescued. We are accepted ourselves by our failure fully with this failure. We offer our struggle to the sacrifice of our Creator, of His Holy Spirit, of His Son, Christ Jesus, time and again and all over and again, time and again. We keep moving forward with Him. We make our victory alone with and through Him, and our so-called individual indifference to what He wants for us to be forgiven by Him.
Thank you, Pam.
Sorry. That's good? Okay. Okay.
Oh, did I interrupt? I'm sorry. It sounded like you were done.
I'm sorry. I just had to clear my breath, and honestly, I was a little confused as to where to stop.
I think that's a good spot for it.
Okay.
So I'm not religious myself, and this is a little bit too much religion for my taste personally, but I do like that it's about patient tolerance and acceptance and balance, and seems to be in support of peace. So if there's going to be something religious, that's the angle that I lean towards. So thank you for sharing, anonymously known, and peaceful tolerance is definitely what I'd get out of this piece. Zach, would you like to comment?
Sure. I'm not too religious either. I'm agnostic, but I could still dig this because I really like how, tragedy, we make, those are sort of signaled out. So those are like very general terms, and it kind of goes a little bit more specific. And I like that. There's like a surrendering to the light and embracing true freedom of everlasting peace. And I like how this poem is 100% allied with the light, and it makes the appearance of Jesus Christ like kind of throughout seem like angelic and like he's clearly doing like it's not redundant. He's clearly doing something different every time when he shows up. So I really like that. I thought it was really well done.
Thank you, Zach. And Pam, it was a breathful, I know. Would you like to comment?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, nice spiritual rite. I do think they could probably have shaved off quite a bit of words by taking out the repetition. But I did enjoy the spirituality of the rite. I did enjoy the message of positivity, of embracing and accepting each other and self-love, just finding that sense of peace and harmony. So nicely done.
Well said. Our next one to the same prompt is by Opti. Zach, would you read that for us?
Sure. Me. I cannot shame myself. I cannot love myself. But I can be me. No shame, no love, just here to be me. Different thoughts, different day, different way. When life intrudes, when promise is broken, when nothing is as it seems, all I have is me. And I'm faithful to me. Me is my only friend. Me is true. I can love you, but I can only rely on me, and when I cease to exist, I will do it with only me. And poem.
Thank you. Great read. So this is a nice little brevity. I like that it has the positive attitude, and at the end, it's like I will do it with only me. It's hard when you can only rely on yourself. I can only rely on me. But it also has this sense of independence. When life intrudes, when promises are broken, even when there's negative things, to be able to rely on yourself, to be able to step up and keep going, that is beautiful. You know, me as my only friend is sad, but learning to love yourself in a way that you don't need to put up with people who are not giving you the love that you need can also be a beautiful thing. So I think even though there's pain in this, it overall has an empowering feel. What were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is a beautifully, beautifully done brevity. I do enjoy Opti's writing. And yes, there's definitely a sadness to it, but there is also that message of learning to trust yourself. Again, we have another right with the dot, dot, dots, and, you know, so, but I like that because it creates a sense of pausing, almost as if you can, you know, with those lines, feel the person, like, inhaling their breath or catching their breath as perhaps they're crying. Me is my only friend. Me is true. I can love you, but I can only rely on me. And when I cease to exist, I will do it with only me. You know, amazing lines on the whole idea that, you know, that sometimes life brings you to the point where it's difficult to trust other people. So very well done.
Agreed. And Zach, what did you think?
Such a self-awareness to the piece. Hard to rely on oneself though like that, I imagine. It's just the me, myself, and I bit is just it's difficult, but it's true. True to the speaker, and there's a true resilience there. And the life of a loner is painful, and yet this speaker is not a loser. So well done with the positive message of inner strength. And I love the me and I pronouns, especially the use of that. And you got to do what you got to do, and you know you best. So that's that message I like. Well done.
Those are some good parts. Great. Our next poem that I'm going to do is by Rosie. I'm never quite sure how to say her name. I see her there on the board. So, hello, Rosie. This is the Duchess of Mosaic. Piece by piece, collecting her biggest puzzle, hustle and tussle all those colorful things. Some she'd ignore, others craved for more. It all begins with an easy part, the one which is obvious, baby steps. She knew which colors or shapes she likes less. Listening to the beat of the heart, it would be success. Who knows? One thing works better than other, tongue on her cheek, trying her best, bringing it all into one piece of art called Journey of Life. End poem. Ms. Pam, let's start with you.
All right. Well, great read there, Faizy. And what a wonderful write by Rosie. I don't know for sure how to pronounce her name, but I always say Rosie because I think of the old Night Court show with the character named Roz. But it could easily also be Rosie. I guess she would have to tell us. Yeah, wonderful imagery in this. I like how it speaks on the colors of a mosaic and how we are made up of those different parts and those different colors. I great lines all the way through, but I especially like it all begins with an easy part, the one which is obvious, baby steps. You know, it's so important, you know, not to necessarily leap into something, but take those small steps, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't know, trying to be healthier or going towards a job goal or whatever it is. You know, I think success is more easily found within those small steps. I also really like, she knew which colors or shapes she likes less, listening to beat of the heart, it could be success. To me, that speaks on just acknowledging what it is that interests us, because, you know, if it doesn't interest you, if it doesn't make you happy, chances are you're not going to stick with it. So amazing, right, and very well done.
I agree, and I think this applies to so many different things. You know, those baby steps. I am not an exercise person or athletic at all, but I've been trying to start working out, and, like, the people who I go with are much more athletic than I am, and I'm like, I'm not going to try to do what they're doing because it's just, I'm going to get discouraged and quit. I'm going to do the easier things. I'm going to have it, like, on the lowest weight. I'm going to do the slow stuff. And you have to start with those little baby steps. But it also works, like, on an emotional level, you know? If you're not willing to put yourself out there completely, you know, just going to a few activities that you like and seeing if there are people there who you can kind of relate to. You know, don't force big friendships or go to necessarily big parties. Like, after my brain surgery, when I was trying to get used to being around people again, I had to, like, very slowly integrate, like, public places back into my life. It's like, can I be in a coffee shop for a short time? Can I do, like, things like that? Before you can, like, go to, like, a concert, you have to be able to work your way up to, can you handle the noise? Can you handle being around a lot of people? No matter what it is in your life, being able to do those little steps makes it so you can go with it. And which colors or shapes she likes, absolutely, for the puzzle pieces, it's like, figure out what works for you, who you click with, not necessarily in a romantic way, but, like, there's just figure out where you feel comfortable, what you feel comfortable doing, what makes you happy, and you're more likely to be successful, because it depends on your definition of successful, but that definition could change as you find what makes you happy, and that could be what is success. Zach, what did you think?
I think Rosie wrote a terrific piece. The mosaic is the self, I think, and people may delve into the self and look for something that the speaker cannot provide. And yet they're aware of the pieces, how sharp they are, their texture and the color, and can't take great leaps to make those changes. The baby steps is the key in order to create, like, your own art of life, to kind of, like, put that effort into everything. And it's way better than doing it in leaps and bounds, in my own opinion.
Awesome. All right. Rosie says that Pam's version is the best way. So, Rosie it is. And she says, I'm going to blush. She enjoys our comments, so that's great. Okay, so I think I read that one, which means... I'm going into the HTML code version of things, which is not necessary. Let's make it more accessible for Pam to read. You don't need it to be all numbers and fun coding things.
Oh, goodness gracious. Nope. But that looks good. All right. This is The War with Myself by Blue Leader One. How can I love myself when I am the enemy? I hate myself. I feel like I always have, but I know there must have been a time when I didn't. I just can't recall it. A civil war is the ugliest kind there is. It's the one with the most passionate hatred, the most bitter and protracted, sane malevolence. How can there be any reconciliations after all the war crimes, the genocide, the unrestricted bombing, the death of innocents, the lies, the pathological lies, believed when convenient, discounted when not, a new double think of evil? It is hell. I am in hell. that I made for myself, the Byzantine trails and tortured paths that led me here are beside the point. I know why. It is because of a demon, the demon of low self-esteem. I stopped seeing the beautiful creation of God that I am and only saw imperfection, not having the wisdom to know that imperfections themselves enhance my beauty. Instead, I grew more dissatisfied, ever more unhappy and angry, until every step was on black ice, every step a fall deeper into the abyss. From the black hole, there is no escape. We are told, but Stephen Hawking saw an escape. Hawking radiation, whatever the math, I can think of no power other than love to accomplish it. So the question is, can I ever stop the fighting, end the war, and make the peace? I just don't know. Can I ever love myself? The only way I can think of is to love the other. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really liked the use of Stephen Hawking and the Hawking radiation theory, and then to use love as the way to accomplish that. That's a really cool way of talking about it. And to love others as a way to love yourself, I get that, because sometimes if you're really hard on yourself and I had this therapist who was like, and if your friend did this, would you think they were stupid? And I'm like, no. And he's like, so you're not either. If your friend did this, would you think? And I was like, if you start to think about how you would treat other people about it, then maybe change your standards to closer to what you would expect of a friend, and loving other people, yeah, gets you closer to that, I would think. It's so sad to see such, self-hatred, and that war within can be absolutely atrocious. So I like that at the end, it's going for a way out and a way to find connection that might help you see yourself in better light. But yeah, my favorite part is definitely the Hawking radiation. What about you, Zach?
It speaks to the inner enemy inside. There's an inner darkness. And I wonder what happened in the speaker's life that must have turned so sour. And it reminded me of Home is Where the Hatred Is by Gil Scott Heron. This home is filled with pain, and the speaker is bound there, but the alternative of running away might be preferable to the dangerous climbing up the walls, feeling of isolation. And there's like an inner struggle that questions the self and loves others, and very selfless, but sad, in fact. Very well done.
I agree. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is definitely an amazing write on learning to love yourself, of walking away from the hatred and the low self-esteem, of, you know, pulling yourself out of that black hole of self-hate and despair. We live in such a world of hate and violence that, you know, the last thing we need is to add an extra layer onto that by hating ourselves. I did like that Stephen Hawking part, but I also really liked where he said, a civil war is the ugliest kind. It's the one with the most passionate hatred, the most bitter and protracted, the most insane malevolence. You know, amazing lines and very well done.
Indeed. Now we have a poem by Daniel Deschino, my co-host from my Thursday show, Double Helix. And Zach, would you read that one for us, please?
Sure. Can I apply for the same standards I hold to others? By Daniel Deschanel. But why do I forget? Instead I live. What is a stabbing, frozen ice pick in my mental endurance? What powers my shame with Alaskan pipeline floodgate fuel? What is a buffet of a classroom taunting warped as guilt to graduate to PhD level from a research paper on laughing memory demons? But why do I forget? Even with desire, hunger, thirst, cravings, lethargy, and everything else that pokes at me for attention constantly as insanity's voice in surround sound stereo, I forget that I'm human, the shame of birth, mistakes, decisions, temptation, selfishness, our CG-altered Instagram posts with the topic of belief or perish within my brainwashed mind of this instant decision mob mentality culture. All of this behind billions of smiles and widened eyes. I don't know if anyone remembers that. All of this rattling the roof of the tornado of the day. All of this, a traffic child, too scared to reach out for help, ignorant to the fact it's just another traffic child anyway. I guess insanity is normality. I love, forgive, compliment, and encourage so many. Why is the answer to myself, nah, I suck. I'm so stupid. What an idiot. I just need to work harder. I really screwed up. I'm being lazy today. I am everyone if I look with eyes of the air and not through mine. Or the twisted way I imagine through all the others. To regret the failure dissipates as a bad meal aftertaste and turns into a future dinner joke conversation. The regret of not trying is a daily sunrise that seems brighter with age, blinding and attacking with blistering remembrance. I love the feeling of happiness, and I do remember it, and the smiles of those around me who truly care. I love when I feel like I'm human, one of them, I mean one of us. Every once in a while, a bit of pride is okay, like the occasional double fudge brownie, maybe even seconds. I love. I am become love. I need to remember. I need to remember. I need to remember. I'm better than this because I have been. I don't know. I could really use a drink tonight. I'll try tomorrow, or at least I'll try to remember, to try tomorrow. End poem.
Thank you for that read. And this was excellent, Daniel. You know, very short lines that end up saying so much. I like that it puts insanity's voices in surround sound stereo, because it's truth. You know, when your inner critic is there, it's like impossible to drown out, and it seems to be coming at you from all directions. I liked the CG altered Instagram posts with that, you know, change the way that you see the world, but the way you see other people and the way you see yourself, because everyone who you see seems like so beautiful and successful and all the things, but not really. I mean, they're behind that mask, those Instagram filters, that nobody's really that perfect, if that's how they're presenting themselves. For, like it says here, I love, forgive, compliment, encourage so many. And he does. He's a very encouraging person, total flatterer. but then to say negative things about himself when you should really be treating himself the way that he treats the other people. One of my favorite parts here is, the regret of failure dissipates as a bad meal aftertaste and turns into a future dinner joke conversation. So being able to laugh at your mistakes is so much better. I was training someone how to do story time, which is like presenting to little kids and part of my job. And during the thing, I dropped one of my felt pieces that I was telling a story with, And I accidentally stepped on it, and the kids, like, laughed hysterically. And I laughed with them. And then afterwards, I'm like, so sometimes things go wrong. And she was like, but you laughed, and that made it so much better. And I'm like, she's like, if you would have been upset, it would have ruined it all. But because you laughed along with them, it was, like, just part of the show. And I'm like, exactly. So you just got to roll with it, you know, not get all embarrassed about it and just deal with it. I mean, there are, all, of course, different kinds of mistakes and failures. That was a minor one of dropping my piece and tripping over it. But it, in general in life, if you can laugh at yourself, then it does dissipate the bitterness of it as much as you can. And a bit of pride is okay. I like it's like the occasional double fudge brownie. And maybe even seconds, you know, let yourself indulge in being proud of yourself. You know, not super egomaniac all the time. I'm the best ever. But, you know, have your moments where you're proud of what you did. But then he goes back into that kind of doubt of like, I don't know if I can do this all the time. Maybe I need a drink tonight, but tomorrow I'll try to try. And kind of recognizing that, you know, as much as it's good to be working towards loving yourself, it's not something that you can magically turn on. It's something that you do have to continue to work on. And I feel like he has a really realistic ending there. Pam, what did you think of Dan's piece?
I like this. There's really an emotional charge to the lines, which, as you were saying, is short and impactful and, you know, really hits hard with the idea of how much we just criticize ourselves so much. We get so hard on ourselves. We have trouble. We'll forgive other people their flaws, but we have so much trouble forgiving our own. And I like that it reminds us that, you know, we are only human. I did also like that part about every once in a while a bit of pride is okay. I thought another part that was good was the regret of failure dissipates as a bad meal aftertaste and turns into a future dinner joke conversation. The regret of not trying is the daily sunrise that seems brighter with age, blinding and attacking with blistering remembrance. I like how it speaks on the idea of that wisdom gained when we realize that so many of life's experiences, even if they may have been technical failures, contribute to our learning and our growing process. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree. We lost Zach for a minute, but I think he's back. Zach, are you back with us?
Yes.
Awesome.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Okay, good.
I hear you now. do you want to comment on Daniel's piece?
Absolutely. I thought it packed a huge punch all the way through, just boom, 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 with those short lines. And my favorite was definitely the Instagram bit, like the vapid mask, that inner self that people hide, a dystopia we live in. And there's a need to detach from others and to view others through a bird's eye perspective and or a fly in the wall. And I really like that rather than through their own eyes, which is it's more freeing, I think, to kind of do that. I just love the structure and the personal sort of affirmations that the speaker gives to kind of self-motivate despite some of those vices. So I thought that was really well done.
I agree. The next poem is by Blayton B. And I'm going to read that one. Just loading him up. I Am Colored by Blayton B. Miseducation taught me to undervalue myself and others like me. Finger pointing and judgment was my first memory, addicted parents, moving like a millipede. In my siblings and I, planted was a seed. Politics uprooted us like a weed. Free market systems told us Jordan's in a need. Like mushrooms we grew, feces they feed. Second-class citizens we carry given creed. Hand-washing floors, Gran had to bleed. Making us fight for scraps, we resort to greed. Generations grew stigmatized. Where did it lead? Daily I ask, who I be? Am I colored? Some degree. You see, taken away from me was my true identity. All I have is my great-grand's memory. We are Khoisan, some say, the beginning of man. Before the invisible hand was the man. Before we were raped, shackled, enslaved. Before we were waved away like fan. Freely on beaches and land, our ancestors ran. Yes, we look Asian, even had a little tan. If you don't know, that's who I am. End poem. And then he talks about being South African and the complications of that in his AN. Pam, would you like to comment first?
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was just a powerful, thoughtful, and intelligent write, and I learned something new. I learned that the Khoisan is a catch-all term for the indigenous people of South Africa. So, interesting. But, yeah, I really like how he's taken a different approach to this, how it speaks on the idea of what you learn from the way a society treats you. And sadly, it seems as if many societies in many countries do treat the indigenous people of a country as if they are worth less. You know, they're not as important, and it's a sad thing because they were the ones who were originally there. They have a deep history. I like that he brings in his great grand, the idea of those stories and traditions passed along from one generation to the next, and amazing lines all the way through. But I did like that. Daily I ask, who I be? Am I colored? Some disagree. You see, taken away from me was my true identity. All I have is my great grand's memory. Wonderful lines and very well done.
I agree. I think this is a really powerful piece, and like you, I enjoy that he brought in his great grand, you know, the history of his family and her being mistreated, her being displaced, influences for generations. If she didn't get to follow her family's traditions and did not, and was treated like a second-class citizen, that gets passed on from generation to generation. You know, there's intergenerational trauma, and you can see that in where he talks about having addicted parents. They were probably mistreated because the grandma was mistreated, and it gets passed on and passed on. Yes, there's so much racism in the world, and I used to think my country was much better about these things, and I have learned as I got older, it's really not. I was just sheltered that there still is so much racism happening and people being mistreated, and I hate to think that. Blayton B is a wonderful person and a wonderful writer, and I think he has a good message here. What did you think, Zach?
I agree. It's just that kind of education is very difficult. It's a hard kind of education from an early age with the millipede memory. There's a dense sort of inner monologue. It seems to be kind of traumatic. It speaks to a bit of a history. And this kind of societal education seems to have caught the speaker from an early age. And I think it just feels like the speaker was converted to a bit of a workhorse. And yet, his ancestral folks still keep him going with that inner strength and the knowledge that they are the first men. And that there's something powerful about that and grounding and resilient. So I like that message.
Me too. And I definitely have seen resilience in other pieces by Blatant B. So keep it up, Blatant. You are awesome. I keep pasting the same thing when I'm trying to do a new one, so I apologize for my slowness there. We have one by Stephen T. Wellman. And Pam, is it your turn to read?
Oh, that's a good question, Faisie. You can just say it's my turn, and it'll be my turn, because at this point
All
I
right.
forgot.
I declare it your turn.
Same.
All right. This is Wounded Warrior by Stephen T. Wellman, and it goes like this. Inner child still struggles, a wounded warrior fighting yesterday's battles. I never measured up. I wasn't quite good enough. A broken perfectionist, could never please no matter what, had a father not worth looking up to, calloused hands left me jaded, black and blue, leaving scars, refrained from embracing, but it was his words, the deadliest weapon of all. They beat me, they battered me, they bruised me, scarred me for life. It took years of running, trying to stand still, to love myself, to be able to look at myself in a silver glass, overcome the shame, become friends with the pain, ignore the chilling lies, this father wound, a deep secret still healing. I am feeling better, yet I still struggle. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Zach, would you start the comments?
Sure. It was sad. Such sad. Like, abuse, the inner child never goes away during the growth process. Just abused verbally and emotionally hurts more than those sticks and stones. And I hope that after all that, that he's able to overcome and, become friends with the pain. It's difficult. And it's not going to heal right away, but I think it's temporarily, not really temporary, because that still sticks with the speaker, but I think the speaker can have to kind of put that on the back burner a bit as the speaker kind of goes through life a bit. Well done.
I agree. This is so sad, and you know, just any time that a child is mistreated just breaks me. And to hear about abusive families is really hard. And he writes about both the physical and the mental, the calloused hands that had him black and blue and the scars, but it was the words that were the deadliest weapon of all. Because, that little playground rhyme of sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me, that's not true. The words stick with you the longest sometimes, they really do. Took years of running, trying to stand still, to love myself. It's really hard running away, not just from the people who hurt you, but from yourself, because you blame yourself somehow, feeling like there was a reason why you were treated the way you were treated, when it's usually with someone like a child, it's not at all their fault. And it's so sad that it becomes like a shame thing for someone who it was not. They shouldn't be the ones who's ashamed. A deep secret still healing. That's when that you have to heal from for forever. It's always a part of things. But hopefully he will, you know, learn to love himself, knowing that it was not his fault, and that he can overcome that voice of criticism that came with the treatment from his father. Oh, Stephen, I just want to hug you right now. It's so sad. You did a really great job in this poem with sharing the emotion. You know, short lines and a fairly short poem, but it does a lot. It reveals those scars. Pam, how about you?
Oh, my goodness, yes. This one is so powerful and emotive. My heart goes out to him, you know, and I love the raw honesty of this poem and how he shares himself with us. And poetry like this is so important to speak on behalf of all of those children who have gone through such horrific things. Because just like you, I hate the idea of any child being hurt, of feeling like it's their fault. And it is an unfortunate and common thing for children to blame themselves when they have an abusive parent. Strong lines all the way through, but I especially like how he starts to speak on the healing. It took years of running, trying to stand still, to love myself, to be able to look at myself in a silver glass, overcome the shame. Wonderful lines and very well done.
I agree. I also just realized that we are going way too fast. That was 14 poems we've been through, and there's still half an hour left. So we gotta read slow. Because I only have two more on my board, and one of them is quite long because it's a Ben one. But you might both have to dig up a poem for me. In the meantime, let's enjoy the ones that we have left. Oh, Rosie added one for us. Thank you. this next one by W1LDC4T. Zach, would you read it for us, please?
Sure. Malleability. Man is imbued with inertial forces. Pride and swagger clouds his notions. The chains within is a clash of emotions. How, then, would he be tamed? Lo, I reflect on the signature of God in man's creation. What is the signature of God in man's creation? Deep down, the ostentatious skin and the padding flesh lies the naked nature of the apparition. The skin and flesh, an expanding spectrum, a facade, donned by some to flash from vigor, opulence, or complexion, a curse born by many announcing poverty, inadequacy, or an infection. The skeleton within is the maxim, a segment that was bestowed to all in equal ration, the signature of God's and man's creation, and barely our truest reflection, closely knitted and carefully integrated to jot and tittle. The building blocks of man are strong but brittle. Crooked teeth for the vein is a battle. Hunchbacks make the sturdy look lil. Flex them to good posture. You may hear the bones rattle. Harnesses and braces, let them evolve ever so subtle. The sestet above is for the wise. Learn to gaze at life as a novice. Know this well, and there shall be no vice. End poem.
Thank you for that wonderful read. The pride and swagger clouds his notions. It's true. Pride and swagger can be a problem in terms of dismissing others if you think you're awesome, but also it creates a high expectation of yourself where you want to be the best, and there's pressure to be the best in that search for the pride and swagger. Where is it? I like the word ostentatious. Where is it now? I lost my place. Opulence or complexion. Where it says crooked teeth for the vain is a battle. It makes me think about how, like, everyone has braces now. Like, when I was a kid, partly because I was poor, but only the people with, like, absolutely crooked, damaged teeth had braces. And now it seems like everyone gets them, like, everyone, because everyone wants to have, like, the absolute perfect flat front teeth. And it confuses me because I actually really like when teeth have, like, personality. Like, my mom has this little one that kind of, like, overlaps the other ones, and I actually think it's super cute, and it's, like, it's just, like, a part of her face that I would be weirded out if it wasn't there. I want people to have differences in their teeth, so this just made me think about how, like, everyone is trying to, like, have, like, these absolutely perfect movie star fake smiles, and it's just not real. The building blocks of man are strong but brittle. I like that. It's a bit contradictory, strong but brittle, but I oddly think in terms of, like, Dungeons and Dragons now, because I've been learning how to play that, and I was always wondering, like, what's the difference between strength and constitution? Because they're both, like, about being strong. And strength being the one, like, how much you could damage something yourself, like, if you could damage it. And then constitution being how easily you're damaged, or how much you can resist. So strong but brittle, they're saying, like, men have the ability to hurt, but really, they don't have very good constitution. I learned philosophy through role playing games. It kind of reminds me of when I was doing my IQ test after I had my brain surgery, and there was one where they made me give the definition of encumbered, and I got it right, but they were like, wow, nobody gets that one. How did you get that one? And I'm like, well, because in a video game, if your character is encumbered, you're carrying too much stuff in your inventory and you can't move. And they laughed so hard, and they were like, no, seriously, how do you know that word? And I'm like, yeah, that's
offering cucumbers.
Oh. It's just how I learned it. So this was just reminded me of that, kind of as an offshoot. Sorry, Wildcat, which I just realized is the username, because I was like, W1LDC4T. But if you look at it, it looks like it says Wildcat. So I think it's just a creative way of saying Wildcat. Perhaps Wildcat was taken. That's just an interesting username that I'm sorry I missed before. Harnesses and braces let them evolve ever so subtle, but does it really create evolution in a positive way if you're forcing it to grow in a certain way? It's like forcing conformity, just like the braces thing. The teeth braces, but also your body braces. And on the one hand, you do want to make it so, you know, you're functional and not in pain, definitely. But something about evolving through harnesses just makes me think about trying to make everyone match. And I don't love that. It also makes me think about when there's some fruit that they look like monkeys, sort of. And I, it was one of those like weird but true, is it true things. And it was not that the fruit naturally came out like monkeys. It was like people were growing it within this thing, and plants grow with how much space they have. So it, yes, it was a thing not photoshopped, but it was forced to grow in that shape by human interference. And are people now growing by human interference? And I don't mean in a physical way like it's talking about here with your good posture, but are we malleable a little bit too much to things like media and peer pressure? I don't know if that's actually where Wildcat was going with it, but that's just where my mind has trickled off. Learning to gaze at life like a novice, to recognize that you are not all-knowing, which, you know, sometimes people always joke about how when you're young you think you can do anything. I mean, I didn't. I was, like, totally scared of everything. But some people, when they're teenagers or just starting out, they think, like, they understand the world more than they actually might. And to just to recognize that everyone needs to realize that there's a lot out there that they don't know. Anyway, that's just where my mind went with this one. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I like those thoughts. Very cool. Yeah, my second born actually has one tooth that is smaller than the rest because he actually didn't get that adult tooth. So if he loses that tooth, he's going to get a fake one or, have an empty spot. But yeah, so I get what you mean. Like they're, you know, you like people to have those individual differences. And I think we all need to kind of embrace the individuality of ourselves. I feel like this spoke on that, but I also feel perhaps there was this message, especially when it mentions the harnesses and braces, let them evolve ever so subtle. I feel like there's this idea of throughout history how oftentimes people with physical or emotional or, you know, psychological handicaps have not been able to function in society or not been able to give the opportunity to function in society. And nowadays, they're given so much more of an opportunity. So many more physical problems can be taken care of, you know, can be fixed. Or, you know, there's ways to, you know, help people do more, so much more than they used to be in the past. I mean, it used to be that people who would be locked up in institutions for their whole life can function in society, maybe not at the same level as other people, but still. And I also liked the spirituality in this and how it speaks on the creation of mankind the idea that we're all made of the same building blocks, and yet there's those subtle differences that make us each a unique person. The idea of being proud of that uniqueness, of understanding that we all have our strengths and weaknesses. And the one-word title, malleability, I like that because, you know, it gives that idea of you should always be open to change. You should offer yourself up as something malleable and open-minded for change. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
It really is. I've lost track of myself now. Zach, did you already comment on this one?
Oh, not yet. Okay, go ahead. I thought it was a fantastic cautionary tale. With the pride and the swagger brought to mind like a Justin Bieber or a Machine Gun Kelly just acting a fool with their ostentatious opulence. And that kind of expensive persona is just so repulsive to me. And what a disgusting caricature of a creature. I just loved how, like, this is kind of like shoving this person in our face to remind us not to be this way, to evolve, you know, to these problems are able to be fixed gradually, and it brings back the notion of baby steps. So, well done.
Great comment. We are back to Ben Hart. So the other one that we did by Ben was the previous contest. This is the one for this week, and it's called Start Over by Ben Hart. I will be 24 years old at noon of April 9th, 2024. And at the time of writing, every one of those 8,695 days on this earth, life frightened me. But no more, because the first thing a mother's body creates is a heart, whispering in warmth to that seed of life, a promise, will grow from here. And I'm only 8,694 days behind on having kept my word to her. We'll grow from here. You once told me there were too many days where that was only true with the sun setting behind us. And that perhaps now, if given the chance, you would find other ways to grow towards the same absence of light. Not just displacing what you cannot erase, but living it in the right way. You called it so eloquently, as if it were not concerning suicide, as if that was the way it was supposed to be if one wanted to start over. Instead of saying goodbye, how about loving your tomorrows for how they will stand out among all yesterdays? And I promise we'll grow from here and not forever be aliens of melancholy in some stranger's happy daydream. We will grow from here. If you are ever lost in this constricted world, ever get to feel too big to make it home in time for your life to still be there, ask yourself how you would help a stranger walking the road of your life in this moment. Trust in your own judgment. Come home. One day, she will love me for my lichen skin. Turned out to be the cruelest thing I ever told myself. I swallowed that pill 1,000 times, not knowing I was playing by a dog's rules in a chocolate romance, when I could have healed from the jab by now. They keep telling me I cannot save the world, nor anyone in it. Well, I say to them, forgive me for trying. Don't be sorry, dear. It's better this way. Because that wasn't me. That was survival. But now I am ready to follow my own advice, rather than that of the one who kept me there. In din. An armed soft. From a distance, it doesn't sound like dying. But up close, I lost my life. Today, for the briefest moment, I was lost. In a place where the winds sing my name, and the reeds wave neighborly as I go by. But I was not a creature of motion then. No. I, like that bird of prey, just hung there, like a stone in the sky. And I felt them all forget me, just tides rushing by. I smiled, letting the thoughts of my life breach the distance between two moons and daylight. And I told him, this is not a day for dying. I will let you know when it is time then. My mother wept when I read her the opening to this. Just this week, after the funeral of an old friend, I bawled, you won't have to bury me, Mama. I will not put you through that. I'm going to live. I promise. In the reflection of the dead television, I saw sitting there. She held me, my whole life, all my tears and all my joys, each now a wing around the boy in a man's body. the boy who believes he lives behind that screen, and no one can hear him. I'm still in here, and I cannot make it stop. I cannot make it stop. I just need the world to stand still. I need to catch my breath. Scream until the skies shatter. I need to be there. They let me be there. I saw us sitting there, but I don't think I got up. It feels like I am the one who died, Mama. Is that what it is? Because my body believes it. Because it feels like I finally figured out what it's been screaming at me this whole time. You're already gone. You're already gone. You're already gone. Maybe I just wasn't ready to choose who I would become. But I think I'm getting there. Just don't lose faith in him. He may be late to the party, but he had every intention of being on time. He just caught up in it all. Make sure he stays the evening and tell him I said hi and that I believe in him because he kept a very important promise for me, the man who held him back. End poem.
Great read there, Faizy. Man, what an amazing write by Ben. I like that he was able to share this poem with his mom. It shows the close nature of the relationship. I really like the lines and the imagery of one day she will love me for my light-hued skin. Turned out to be the coolest thing I ever told myself. I swallowed that pill 1,000 times, not knowing I was playing by a dog's useless rules in a chocolate romance. I like that, a dog's useless rules in a chocolate romance. The idea that chocolate is poisonous to dogs and the idea that some relationships are toxic. I also like where he says, no, I, like the bird of prey, just hung there like a stone in the sky, and I felt them all forget me, just tides rushing by. Amazing lines all the way through, and I really like how this speaks on personal growth and how sometimes it can take a while, but oftentimes once it happens, we realize what a beautiful process it can be. So amazing write and very well done.
It was a really emotional one to read. Like, I didn't pre-read this one. I knew what it was going to be about because I had been talking to Ben before he wrote it or around the time that he wrote it. So I knew some things that would be mentioned, but it really hits hard. And I do think it's beautiful that he had that part with the mom, with the starting with the heart and growing and then being able to show her and continue on. Not displacing what you erase, but living it in the right way. And as if it were not concerning suicide. The part that really hit me was when he sees them in the TV, that reflection, like seeing his own story with his mom holding him and promising that she won't have to go through that, what his friend's mom just did, to see the pain of someone else's suicide and make it realize that you don't want to end in that way, for the people to have to feel that. And then at the end, he's talking about himself as if he's not himself, where it's like he's the new him is going to be successful and and not successful as in, like, rich, but is going to be able to, you know, get himself to the party, to be there with his friends, to be alive, to feel alive, and to talk about himself as, like, I stopped him from doing that because he held himself back, really goes with this quote, the prompt, I think, because it has, like, that shadow where he just kind of, like, gave into the shadow in the first part, and then there's the one where it's, like, you let love hold you up, and he's, I think the mom, in a way, in this, is the love that's holding him up and helping him realize to hold himself up. The part that really hit me in the heart, I think, is when he feels like he's the one who died. Feels like I'm the one who died, and I've felt like that. I've had that feeling, and I think that he captured it so well that it's relatable to people who have, but it's also accessible to people who haven't. I feel like he puts words to things that are really hard to describe. Thank you, Ben, for writing this beautiful piece and sharing with us. Zach, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I forgive me if this comment seems a little short, but just maybe to miss my mom and maybe feel like my growth is stunted too. I'm glad the speaker has their beloved mother during this piece to start, and what a devotion and love that isn't tainted, but rather a pure beacon of light. And there's such a compatibility at first, and it's evident, but it was just really sad, and it just brought back a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely a piece that brings up a lot of emotions, and you have a poem here that is related, so I'm going to put that up, the one that you asked to share, and yeah, we'll do that one, and then we'll do one by Peter Selway, and I think that will be our time. Okay, so go ahead and read your poem.
Okay. My first crying film, Hereditary. Hearing the telephone pole smack her skull in, that sound kicked me back, rippling my skin like wind, hitting me in the place where my mother died. Annie Graham found her daughter dead, decapitated corpse, blood black like tar, kicked on the stump, sitting still on her car seat. After the fatal wreck, nobody in the driver's save her stone son, laying awake in bed, shell-shocked. He left his sister head back on the driveway. Her tongue tasted death, crawling with ants. Such a loud, I just want to die. I remember mine, ring loud in the theater, followed by that wail, kneeling on the floor the same way I did, finding her lifeless body, lolling on the couch, silenced my screams. No, 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 no. Sobs came later. I echo her bray, not in the theater, too shocked in my seat to breathe, to move. Relief came after a second showing. The first film to slice my eyes with strands of piano wire, leaking twin rivers, filling dry-cut canyons. I dug deep. The tide stops rising, falling like her chest, lowering last rest. My ground healed after a long drought. End poem.
Wow, that is a very intense piece. And I like the lines hitting me in the place where my mother died, because, you know, grief is something that sits in you, and every once in a while something like a movie will smack you in that wound, and you'll feel everything that's happening in the fictional story so much more because you connect it to your own pain. And it brings up all of those feelings. I mean, I find that with the poetry on this show sometimes, it stirs things. And to hear the crying and the yelling within the movie and feel what you did, to see your own grief in this and recognize it is so intense and sad. I really liked as much as it's disgusting, to slice my eyes with strands of piano wire leaking twin rivers. I mean, like, eyes getting cut totally grosses me out, but I love that as a metaphor of, like, it cut you open and you cried uncontrollably as this movie just, like, hit you so hard. It's a really intense image, and I'm so sorry for your loss. You express it really powerfully.
Thanks.
Pam, would you comment?
Absolutely, yeah. And I, too, am sorry for your loss. And I like that you write about the movie, but you, more importantly, write about how you connect with the movie and the main character and the crying and the imagining what it would be like to put your mother through the same thing and then thinking on your own grief. Amazing lines all the way through. After the fatal wreck, nobody in the driver's saved her stone son, laying awake in bed, shell-shocked. Wow. I mean, just really a tough look at the emotions that can overwhelm and well up inside of us. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
Oh, so many feelings tonight, which is great. You know, poetry should hit you in the feels, and it has been, for sure. Our probably last poem of the night is the last one in the contest that was just added, during the show, so I'm glad that he snuck it in. This is by Peter Solway, and it's called Self-Portrait Evolving. Losing flippers, gaining wings, a bald Darwin below, an eagle slow clapping, scalp caressing, consciousness within, inflatable brain, never to know itself again. Reflect on AP's mission. Whole valleys, canyons to claim, feast on mice of Nietzsche, power to festivals of the people, art of the utterly useless. Bird woman to sing, yodel into being, oh, futile fish caught, longing for such an embrace, bouncers displaced in art of further report, ferried aloft, dismembered and dished out, accustomed to crying, insistent, desperate, mystic eaglets, at home on the crag of the mighty cliff, nest of gentle twigs, gift of national socialists, a childhood of Nietzschean instruction, the noble conform far in time. But Adolf, the universal boss, polemic to vomit, spew on the masses, salted champagne and ashes, caviar down rinsed crevices, peasant crab now on top of things in his nuclear submarine, firm jacket, periscope up, searching for enemies, disregarding history of crash planes, bad channels of TV, COVID lockdown, idle masturbation, lonely eagle of Berlin, Washington, all underwater frozen, waiting for the timetable of evolution, warmth to return again. Mating microbes, satellites with wings, contest to sing, send poems, eagles of eager symbolism, power to the digitally connected, food of thought for everyone, craters for swimming pools on the tamed moon, poets no longer dying to go there, anywhere fed to little eaglets. And poem.
Well, as always, and great read there, Faisy. Peter has intriguing imagery and metaphors. I like how this speaks on the idea of a smaller section of our lives, a smaller world, such as the world of AP that we all tend to live on. But it also takes a look at the broader picture of the world and history itself, and how those things which we are instructed in, we often become, and it becomes difficult to get away from those. I really liked where he said, "Birdwoman to sing, yodel into being, oh futile fish caught, longing for such an embrace, bouncers displaced in art of further report." You know, how often are people find themselves in the embrace that kills them? So amazing write and very well done.
Peter is always interesting. I should never put his at the very end because my brain is no longer capable of absorbing such things. I do like that he made it kind of the AP world, the all poetry, which is, you know, in a way its own little world that we live in, those of us who are on it constantly, like I am. I liked, where is it now? The fart in time. It's like, you know, it's not like a moment in time or whatever. It's a fart in time. It's just very much Peter Selway kind of sense of humor. peasant crab now on top of things is an interesting idea. Where is it now? The swimming pools on the moon is interesting. And it's the tamed moon. You know, it's as if the moon was normally, like, wild. And in a way, I suppose it is, because it's its own thing, not very inhabited by humans, most of the time. Something about turning the craters into swimming pools creates kind of it's a fun image, but at the same time, it's sort of depressing that, you know, our colonialism goes so far as to take over everything. So in that way, taming the moon is a way to put it. It's like there's no empty or wild place left. We've made everything into that. It's not turning it into, like, lakes, but to swimming pools. It's for our own purposes. And poets no longer dying to go there, because the part of why, you know, we might dream of the moon is because it's like uncharted territory. It's something that is a mystery, and once it becomes, you know, like the commercialized everything else, then it won't be so poetic. Interesting. Zach, what were your thoughts?
That was great. The dolphin to eagle bit, or losing flippers, gaining wings. Like, becoming, it's like the transition from sea to air. And, of course, we have Darwinism and evolution. Lovely descriptions. It's such a history to the piece. And the Nazi imagery was kind of terrifying, but it was tempered by the teaching of Nietzsche. And and reverting back to nature as an eagle brings a literal bird's eye view to the piece, and I really enjoyed that. Well done.
Great comment. We are officially out of time. I have 30 seconds left, so thank you very much, Pam Ray, for always being here when I need you, and Zach, it was really great to have you on the show. Yeah, that's awesome. Anyone who wrote for my contest, thank you very much. Rosie for being on the board. And I hope that more people will enter my contest. I have a few to judge this weekend, and then as soon as I have an empty slot, I will be posting a whole bunch of new contests, because that's what I do. It's always contests all the time. Check me out, Aphasiana, on allpoetry.com to be on next week's show. Good night, everyone.
Mm.